Alma Parker, you have this proclamation you wanted to share?
Yes. During the school board meeting earlier this month, we actually read the proclamation given by our governor of Alaska, dated October 2nd, and it recognizes Filipino-American community as the largest Asian-American ethnic group in Alaska. And I didn't want to go into details, but it did include very, very interesting information on how the Filipinos came to Southeast Alaska. For example, the earliest evidence of Filipinos coming to the continental U.S. was in October 18th, 1587, and they first reached the Alaska shores in 1788. Then some historical records show Filipinos coming to Southeast Alaska and on whaling ships, and they served aboard ships. Then they came to Juneau in gold mines and fish canneries. In the 1900s, Filipinos were living permanently in Alaska, contributing to a variety of industries across the state. And in October 1988, they commemorated the presence of the first Filipinos on U.S. soil and their contributions, and acknowledged October as Filipino American History Month. So I just thought that was great to share during a school board meeting, because our school district is very diverse and many of the ethnic groups that are represented are Filipinos. And we bring in a rich wealth of not only culture, but traditions that I hope that we continue to share in our community.
Okay, and I'd like to talk about some of those as we move on. Let's talk to you, Clara Diaz. Can you? I see you have this book before you.
Oh, yeah.
What is that book?
It's a book that is similar to what he had been talking about, although that's the whole, you know, Filipinos coming over to the United States, you know, but.
And the book is Filipinos in Alaska, 1788 to 1958.
Yeah, it's just the Filipinos coming over to the United States. But this is more of Alaska. Mm-hmm. You know, so the canneries, Filipinos coming over. And she was talking about that 1900. I came 1958, and I happened to meet the Del Fierro that started in 1900 here. Yeah, then most of those older Filipinos married natives, so they were. There's a three generation of the Del Fierros that were what they call this, supervisors or foreman for all three canneries here in Ketchikan. That's Ward Cove, Sunny Point, and Fidalgo. There were three canneries.
And Del Fierro, is that
Del
a family?
Del Fierro, yes, it's a family.
And why did you come to Alaska?
Because my cousin works for the Sisters of St. Joseph. They were the, you know, and so when I was going to school, my cousin, you know, we communicated to the family and then mentioned that I was taking up nursing. So before I finished nursing, Sister Inda, who was the administrator at the hospital, already started my petition. So I came over as an immigrant right away.
Okay, and then did you later become a citizen?
Oh, yeah, when I got married and go back. So I, you know, to make my travel smoother, then it would, you know. So, yes, I did. I've been back and forth.
And any sense on from either of you of what is it about Alaska? It seems a lot of Filipinos come to Alaska. Is there something appealing specifically about Alaska?
Well, it's because of the industry, I guess, at that time. That's the most, like, mm-hmm. when Filipinos come over to the United States, the first thing they did go for would be in California, and there's farming in there. But discrimination is, you know. And even when they came over here, there was a big discrimination in here. like good, like they call Filipinos as dogs. So this Del Fierro went to the, you know, office to go around fight for it. And after that, because he was a good, you know, magsaysay. That's his uncle. He was the president, you know, in the Philippines. And this is the nephew that was here. And then, according to the son, he was a good speaker. Well, he's loud. I know that because I met them, you know. He's tall and loud, and he's mouthy. So even see, Filipinos are dogs. You know, that's what it was.
I think for many of the other generations later, my family, for example, came due to the military. So my father was in the Coast Guard. And when you come for a certain type of job, you then become like that main point of contact to bring your extended family over. So my father was the first to come to the United States, and my maiden name is Manabat, so then he was able to then obtain citizenship, petition his me. I was born in the Philippines, and I came when I was only 8 months old, and then he was able to petition his family, his father, and then his brothers, and it whatnot came after. He was from a family of 14, so that was a big help to bring family over and immigrate to the United States. And I think just from my perspective of being a younger generation, seeing family is truly, truly important to our culture. They do tend to, once someone has arrived and maybe settled themselves here in Alaska, they bring extended family, and then it just continues to grow, and I think that's why the population just grows and grows.
And another thing, in 1970s, I know that parents who had been in military in the Philippines, their children were allowed to come over as an immigrant, I think.
Yes, I did get, though I still had to obtain citizenship.
Yeah, so your father was on duty somewhere, right. But these are the children of military in the Philippines.
And I guess speak a bit about the culture. What is it maybe that people don't know about the Filipino culture that you'd like to share? It sounds like family is very important. That's a big part of it. But is there something that maybe people... It'd be good for people to understand that or know about the culture. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think there's a unifying thing that brings us all together is, yes, the culture of family unity and tradition. But I think a lot of people don't know is that the Philippines has a diverse culture within its own country. Having 7,000 islands and various dialects, various religious affiliations, that diversity alone within one umbrella of the Filipino culture does bring a uniqueness to our people. I think we have so many different dialects. Here in Ketchikan alone, every dialect in every region you come from already has like a identifying thing that they're good at. You know, like from my family, we're from the region of Pampanga, and we're known as the good cooks,
we're the best cooks.
And then you have other cultures that are known for a certain, you know, dance or and whatnot. So I think that's what I can share that I know. I'm sure Grandma Clara has.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's family. You know, there's the strong ties in family. Except now it's a little bit, you know, fitting up unless you're in the same place, you know. Right.
That's interesting, and that does make sense because it is a very large country, and I don't think people understand how many islands or how it's spread out or necessarily. But that makes complete sense that not, you know, there isn't like, this is what Filipino is, just like any place, depending on where you're regionally, where you're from and such. Are there some maybe traditions that you can share that are somewhat universal, or maybe they are for the specific islands or specific groups? Is there any kind of traditions Filipino tradition, so to speak.
I know Christmas is a huge, huge celebration. And I haven't celebrated or had the opportunity to celebrate Christmas in the Philippines, but I know how many days do they celebrate
that? Oh, gosh, they start in September or October somewhere.
Yeah, they start early.
Early.
So the countdown for Christmas in the United States, you know, right after Thanksgiving, they've already started in the Philippines.
Yeah.
So I think that's one big celebration or tradition that they have. And I know every, what they call like neighborhood or whatnot, they have their fiestas in celebration of their saint. So there's very strong religious ties to what influences their celebrations.
And I imagine that changes coming to the United States.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think many of those ties tend, there's a break, obviously. And the month of October is Filipino-American Heritage Month. And I think it's celebrating that the immersion of both cultures coming here. But I think we try to keep it within our family circle and try to keep those traditions alive. But the big fiestas and big celebrations are really reserved for the country, and I don't think we celebrate many of those.
Is Christianity the main religion?
Catholic.
Yes.
Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Catholic. So most people are Catholic. Okay.
I think it's
like 98% or something.
Very large. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it is.
And what are maybe some of, I know that oftentimes there are sales, you know, food sales and whatnot of the different types of foods. What are traditional Filipino foods that maybe now have come to America or changed because you're here in America?
Well, yeah, there's some.
Well, as the restaurant owner, she should probably speak of that.
Yeah, the adobo pancit and what is the other?
Lumpias.
Yeah, lumpias.
Which everyone knows, yes. Very popular. So is it different here from when you were there? Have you changed the recipes in a sense?
Yeah, it depends upon what kind of vegetables you have to use. And seasoning, it's a little bit different, you know, very.
What would it traditionally?
But we improvise it to what is closest to the, you know. So anyway.
And when you were in the Philippines, what could you get there? What recipes could you make there that it's harder to make here?
You know, I left 1958 and I live in a village. My parents were land seekers, so there's only about 9 families in the village where I live. And when I, like, before, because it was just a village, you have to go far or leave home to go to school, even grade school. So I don't have that much except for my, you know, few years being home and, you know, grade school. Then when you go to high school, you're 72 miles away. So you don't go home every 3 months because, you know, fair transportation, you know, had been difficult. It's a Muslim. So I'm a little bit different. All I know, when I got here, do you know how to cook this and this? All I know is to boil water, because all I had to depend on are vegetables, the greens around that's growing in the village. So I don't have much exposure of how to cook back home.
Then how did you get into the restaurant business?
Well, I inherited. I was a nurse for 20 years in the old hospital. And so because it was timely for my mother-in-law to retire, so I had to make choice either to, you know, take the restaurant or to pursue my, you know.
And so are you yourself the cook, or you have other people?
Oh, yeah, I have other people. Oh. Those are all the relatives, her relatives.
So that's how we're kind of related in a sense. My uncle does work for her.
Yeah.
And
he had worked for me since 1980. So, and now I got the 3 brothers working for me.
So back with the food, lumpia is obviously very popular and a very Americanized people know, but we have variations of lumpias, what she was saying, vegetable lumpias, which are the larger ones. And then we have the skinnier ones, which we call Shanghai lumpia, which is mostly just meat. It could be, it's mostly pork, I believe.
But they're very, very creative, you know.
Yeah, like, and now we've incorporated Alaska stuff, and we've done halibut lumpias. I've even done smoked salmon lumpia. So we really are merging the two cultures and still trying to add a little flavor into our traditional foods. Pancit, I think, is also has a very, it's a noodle-based dish. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people serve that in celebration of, in birthdays specifically, because it symbolizes long life. The noodle is a symbol of long life. So when you have a birthday party, normally you have what we, the pancit dish in celebration of the person's birthday it is.
Interesting. Are there any, I don't know if it's the right term, but maybe superstitions or cultural things like that that are in the within the culture?
Oh, yes. Superstition, yes, I think that's a big, from especially our older, you know, our parents, yes. And some of them had handed it to their own, you know, siblings, and sometimes they still, you know, talk the thing over when you do, you know, something like a little bit different. Oh, the old people says it has to be this way and has to be that way, you know.
So that sounds like a little more like traditions, as opposed to
sometimes there's
like the throwing the salt over your shoulder or things like that. I mean, are there those kinds of things, I guess, within the culture? And I don't know.
This
is an odd question, but
I know sometimes I remember when my mom was alive, she would always tell me, like, if you're hosting the party, you never let your guests wash your dishes because it just takes good fortune away from you. New Year's, you try to surround yourself with bowls of round fruit.
Round fruit, yeah. And even clothes.
Clothes with circles, because it symbolizes money.
Money.
So good fortune for the next year.
I'll take advantage of that.
Yeah, so make sure you have grapes and oranges and things around. What other things like that? I think that's what she was asking.
Anything round.
No. What else do we do?
And then for your clothes, you have to wear anything that has those multiple round thing. And
I'll be aware of that if I see a lot of people wearing things like that.
Yeah, and a lot of the elders with the, I don't know if it's called palm reading, but they'll look at your hands and look at the lines on your hands and. Mm-hmm. They'll, you know, I remember my grandma used to hold my hand and, like, look and saying, oh, you're a big spender because, you know, you're, like, this part of my hand has a big pocket. Uh-huh. And she's like, you never save. You're always spending money. And it is true.
I was going to ask that.
But I don't know if that's really why the line.
It could be.
But they say, you know, they always tell us these little quirky things that we go, really? Is that true? But.
And then I can ask you that with the younger generation, are these traditions being carried on or are they kind of getting lost in this technological culture?
You know, I really do feel that some of it's getting lost. So many of our younger generations are too focused on their iPhones and their iPads and everything. And when I was growing up, I remembered every Sunday going to Filipino cultural dance lessons. And we would have a big community-wide event where all of our all the students who would perform, we would practice at the Sons of Norway right down here by the, now it's the Legions, right? Mm-hmm. American Legion. But we would practice there. And my teacher, Helen LaMarche, she would make us do all the cultural dancing. And I would hate going every Sunday. Now I've come back with my own children and I don't see that. Any of those, you know, type of classes or lessons. And I've tried to incorporate it with, you know, being when people invite me to the monthly grind or at the schools, I try to bring a rendition of what I remembered through our stick dance, our tinikling stick dance. We've done a candle dance in celebration of Grandma Clara.
I have a big album for
yeah,
all of them.
Yeah, she used
you know,
to because be one I, of the
I coordinated
coordinators,
the, yeah. The Filipino community from 1985, and she was one of the
youth dancers.
Youth, and even when she was little, she was already dancing with her brother, you know. Mm-hmm. And then as youth, they were really very, you know, except it was hard to, you know, to get them practice because of school, you know. But I had also the elderly, which was, you know, they're mostly teachers back home, I heard, so that it was easy for them to, you know, and they are always available because they're retired. So.
I'm curious about the Filipino language, Tagalog, am I correct? Mm-hmm. And is that still commonly used? Are people here keeping that tradition going? I know the older generation definitely, mm-hmm. but are younger people speaking it as well?
Yeah, I think my version is called Taglish, so I incorporate Tagalog in English. I definitely understand Tagalog more than I speak. When I was growing up in Ketchikan, back then there weren't very few of people who looked like me or talked like me. So I do remember being ashamed of having a second language and having my parents talk to me. And I remember saying, no, don't speak to me in that. I need to speak English. I want to fit in. And I think a lot of that age group really felt that. Like Grandma Clara was saying, there were still people that are, you know, very discriminatory about to us. Then as more and more of the Filipinos came to Ketchikan specifically, I think people learned to accept and learn that, you know, they all coming from different languages or countries, that it became more accepted. So I do regret not speaking it as much as I could have. My family spoke it very much. My grandma only spoke Tagalog to us. But I would always answer in English. And now my children barely can understand, which I'm very mad at myself for, is that they barely understand. So I think as you dwindle down to this new age of technology and whatnot, if you're not instilling the language early enough, it won't continue, and that's unfortunate. I would hope that more and more families still want to speak that language within their household. But it is something that I fear with the newer and younger generation that it won't continue. People will just kind of merge.
And we know that same thing has happened to the Alaska Native languages as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the Native, you know, you still have classes for the, you know, they're still teaching, you know. My friend Dolores Churchill still does.
Right, they revived.
They're reviving it, and it's part of, now it's a class that's available at the high school. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, the Tagalog is very similar because of the Spanish influence that founded our country. Many of our words are similar.
To Spanish.
A lot of words are similar to Spanish. So we can hear it with our, you know, with our Spanish sisters and brothers and sisters. But like I was mentioning earlier, 7,000 islands also includes many, many dialects. So Tagalog is the most popular, but there are so many different sub-languages within that. So my family actually speaks Tagalog and Kamampangan, which is a second language there.
Interesting. Well, those were kind of my main questions. Are there things that you wanted to share that we haven't discussed?
Well, I would love to reignite the cultural dance, of course, as well as celebrations and whatnot. And I think my hesitation was not stepping on the toes of the Filipino community because there was their own. It became really difficult. Again, 7,000 islands, seven different. I mean, you have people who thought they should run a community center a certain way. Then I do have to say our culture is known for taking pride in where you come from. So whoever is at the helm of that particular term, they're running it the way they want to run it. And then another president will run it the way they want to run it. And there was never any consistency to really bring it back into one. Where I was more, I'm neutral. I don't care who is running it, but we need to bring it back and bring the kids back to reignite the culture that once was so thriving here in Ketchikan. I do remember. We would do two a year. I remember dancing at Shombar, and they would take out all the tables, and it was packed, and they would provide a meal. I believe Grandma Clara would be the one, you know, organizing the meals. They would all sit for dinner, and all these youngsters would come out and dance, and then all our moms would do another dance, and then we'd come out and change and do another costume dance. So it really, it was a huge celebration, and I would love to bring that back, and I hope that this month, by celebrating Filipino-American Heritage Month, it does remind our community that we have something very special that we should probably continue to celebrate.
Yeah, right.
And then maybe with this information getting out there, maybe someone will contact you to help spearhead that effort.